Hey ho, Ramones fans, and welcome to Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us. As you all know, this show is available on all major podcast platforms and is all over social media. It's on pretty much all the platforms. Just search for Pinhead Pod and you will find us. This episode's guest is author and filmmaker Legs McNeil, one of the founders of Punk Magazine. That's coming up in just a little bit. But before we get there, I don't have any news for August for the Ramones. All is quiet on that part. But we do have many dates for August, so let's get to those. August 4th, 1979, the movie Rock and Roll High School premiered in New York City. Written by Alan Arkush and Joe Dante, directed by Alan Arkush, starring PJ Souls, Vincent Van Patten, Clint Howard, and more. The movie is described as Ramones fanatic and delinquent Riff Randall battles it out with a strict new principal of Vince Lombardi High School with help from the Ramones. August 6, 1996 is the 2,263rd and final Ramones show. It was held at the Palace in Los Angeles, California. Featured guests such as Dee Dee Ramone, Lemmy, Eddie Vedder, Lars Fredriksson, Chris Cornell, and others. And the show was recorded and released on November 18, 1997 as the live album We're Outta Here. August 9, 2004, End of the Century premiered in New York City. It is a documentary telling the story of the Ramones, directed by Jim Fields and Michael Grumula. It was released on DVD on February 25, 2020. August 11, 1957, Richie Ramone is born. Born as Richard Reinhardt in Passaic, New Jersey. And then August 12th, 1987, Richie Ramone's last show with the band. It was held at the JAG in East Hampton, New York. Richie was already having some creative differences with Johnny, but left the band after refusing for a percentage of merchandise money, and supposedly Joey and Dee Dee were all for it, and Johnny refused. This led to August 28th and 29th, 1987, Elvis Ramone plays with the band. Of course, Elvis was Clem Burke of Blondie. He played August 28th at the Living Room in Providence, Rhode Island. And then he played August 29th at City Gardens in Trenton, New Jersey. He was let go from the band because his style didn't fit and he couldn't keep up. And Marky Ramone returned to the band. August 16th, 2005, Weird Tales of the Ramones box set was released. The set was compiled by Johnny Ramone and contains 85 songs and a DVD of the 1990 documentary Lifestyles of the Ramones. The set also included an oversized comic book, a pair of 3D glasses, and a postcard. August 19, 2003, NYC 1978 was released. This album was recorded on January 7, 1978 at the Palladium in New York as part of the Biscuit Flower Hour Archive series. And this is the last commercially recorded performance with Tommy Ramone in the band. August 28, 2007, Hilly Kristal passed away. He passed away at the age of 75 from lung cancer. Of course, Hilly was the founder and owner of CBGB's in New York, which was critical to the early development of the Ramones and a key venue throughout their career and so many other artists. All right, that's it for the historical dates for August. Now let's take a break. And when we come back, we will have my interview with this episode's guest, Leg McNeil.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams.
All right, and welcome back to the Pinhead Pod. This time I'm being joined by journalist and author Legs McNeil. Legs, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad we got the. We're having some technical difficulties. I'm glad we got rolling on this finally. Let's get into this. You primarily grew up in Connecticut, is that right?
Yeah.
So, what was the first music that you remember catching your attention when you were growing up?
Donovan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What caught your eye about caught your ear about Donovan?
Mellow Yellow.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good song. Yeah.
It's a shitty song.
I was trying to help you out there.
Compared to Sunshine Superman and all the good
true,
stuff.
True. Man, but Donovan seems a long way from punk. How's that happen?
It was 60s pop. I love 60s pop.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, there's a lot to be said, right? 60s pop, a lot of the early punk stuff.
The Kinks, the Animals, you know.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Great stuff, you know? Yeah. Psychotic reaction, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Shadows of the Night, you know.
Yeah. And I saw a weird thing. Did when you were in 69, when you were 13, did you spend the summer in Mexico?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that. How did that happen? What was that all about?
My mom had a breathing problem, and she was dating my grammar school janitor. And I believe they went to Arizona for her health. And she convinced her brother, my Uncle Bill,
Yeah.
who was nuts, who was crazy.
Yeah.
We started on Cape Cod and we ended up in Mazatlan, Mexico. And
Okay.
we drove there. We took a bus to Leslie, Arkansas, so my Uncle Bill could pick up his car.
Yeah.
And then we drove to South Padre Island in Texas. And my brother surfed Hurricane Celia
Yeah.
when it wiped everything out. And then we drove to Mazatlan because my brother had read in Surfer magazine about this place called San Blas, which is where I believe they filmed the John Huston film Night of the Iguana.
Okay.
And apparently the waves were supposed to break on this island and you could ride them in for a mile. You know, the way the waves broke. I don't know. We never made it to San Blas, but he surfed Mazatlan while I ran a gang of shoe shiner boys.
Okay, so then, but ultimately you wind up in New York.
And we sold pot to the Canadian tourists, which were the only people
Wait.
going to Mazatlan at that time, you know?
Okay, so your brother's surfing and you're selling pot to the Canadian tourists in Mexico.
Yes.
Wow, what a life.
Yeah.
All right, so you end up right in New York ultimately when you get a little older, right? And you're
When I'm 18.
yeah. And so but when you end up in New York, it's a rough time for New York, right? It's not the New York of now.
No,
It's
no. It's completely abandoned, destroyed, burned out. It's like a war zone.
Yeah. And so why did you wind up there? Was it for the music?
No, I hated music. You know, I still hate music. Because it was a city that said yes to everything, to every possibility. And Connecticut was just the most horrible, oppressive place to live, you know? It was
Yeah.
just, where are you?
Well, right now I'm in North Carolina. I'm from Indiana. I spent most of my life in Indiana. Now I'm in North Carolina. In two weeks, actually 2 weeks from today, I'll be moving to Florida.
Why
So
are you moving to Florida?
my oldest son lives there, and I have a work from home job. So we just thought, what the hell? And I'm moving to.
What do you do for a living?
I work in payroll for a big company. I do. Yeah. So I handle like payroll hours and stuff like that.
Do you think you could send me some of that payroll money?
See, I'm not on that side of it. I'm on the pre-paying side. I make the edit and hours and stuff like that. I don't write the checks or anything, man.
Prepay me.
Yeah, well, if we could sign you up as an employee of the company, maybe. I don't know.
Well, what company is it?
Cummins.
What's that?
You ever heard of
No.
Cummins? It's a automotive. They build diesel engines. Well, they do a little bit of everything, but lots of engines. They're big in the new electrification stuff. All that kind of stuff. It's a big Fortune 500 automotive thing. So, but I'm on the payroll HR side of it. So, it works. I like working from home.
How old is your son?
He turns 30 this year.
Wow. You
Yeah,
got a
yeah.
30-year-old son, huh?
I do. Yeah, I turned 50 this year. But
Oh.
yeah, got a 30-year-old son and
Are you still married?
Yeah.
Yeah. How's your
Yeah.
wife?
She's great.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
good for you.
Yeah. I man, I hit the lottery.
Yeah.
Yeah, did good. So not too bad. But yeah, I mean, I like the beach. I like sunshine. Always wanted to end up in Florida. Thought it'll be the retirement days, right? When I'm
Yeah.
done. But since I work remote, I thought, well, why wait? Let's go ahead and do it. Time was right, and so we'll be there in 2 weeks. We close on a house in 2 weeks.
Whereabouts in Florida?
Pensacola, the Gulf side.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I like that side. It's like I'm about 3 hours from New Orleans because I like New Orleans, stuff like
Gotcha.
that. So, yeah,
Well,
I'll...
good for you. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. So, you're like anyway, you're in New York,
Right.
hating music apparently, right? And tell us though, tell
Well,
us about.
I hated it because it becomes such crap, you know.
Right, yeah.
It become folk rock, basically.
Yeah. And yeah, little did you know what it would be like today, man. It's even
I know it's even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about discovering CBGBs though.
Well, Holmstrom, Jed and I, Holmes, Jed was back for the summer because he ran a painting business. And I was staying at his apartment in the center of town. And Holmstrom came up because he wanted to go swimming and stuff. Because, New York in the summer is not the best, you
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
So he came up and we were listening to Blood on the Tracks,
Dylan, yeah.
which had just come up, which was a great album.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
And he took that off and he put on The Dictators.
Okay.
And that's all we listened to for the rest of the summer. It was just fantastic.
Yeah.
When we were driving back to New York in Jed's punk mobile, which wasn't the punk mobile yet,
Yeah.
John said, I want to start a magazine. He said, I want it to be about comics and rock and roll, which is what he was into.
Sure.
He read all the rock magazines. I never read any. I hated rock
Yeah.
magazines.
Yeah.
Were just crap, you know. So I said, what are you going to call it? He said, Teenage News. And he had a comic strip that I helped write some of them in Scholastic Magazine. And it sounded very much like a Scholastic magazine. It sounded like my weekly reader, you know.
Yeah.
That's a stupid name, you know. I didn't know that it was after an unreleased New York Dolls single.
Yeah.
But how could I, since they'd never released it?
Yeah.
And I said, that's, he said, what would you call? And I said, punk. And that's how it came. This was before we even went to CBGB's.
Yeah.
So then we went, we decided to do punk. And he said, we're going to go to CBGB's. And there's this other band, Ramones, and they wear black leather jackets. And I've seen them, and they're pretty good. And I said, okay, let's go. Our blue denim jackets and our cream T-shirts. And we went to CBGB's. And that's the night we met Lou Reed and everything happened. And we met the Ramones, and the Ramones were fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, this is early on. So I mean, were you impressed by the Ramones right off?
Oh, yeah. But,
Yeah.
yeah. It was like the SS had taken the stage. You
Yeah.
know? It was
Yeah.
like, it was just what rock and roll needed, you know?
Yeah.
You could hear the Chuck Berry in it and the
Yeah.
Beach Boys, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah. You hear everybody say that, right? I mean, even the people that say, oh, they listen to the Ramones, they're like, oh, that's horrible. It's horrible. But then they said, oh, the next day they found themselves listening to it again for some reason.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
it was something there. And of course you were
Oh,
talking Holmstrom, and Dunn, certain punk magazine. Where did you come up with the name punk? I mean, we know that that had been mentioned in Cream magazine earlier.
I think it was from the Dictator song Weekend.
Okay.
It's
Okay.
really, it's a local punk, but it's
Yeah.
what they called me my whole life too, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so
Yeah, punk had a different connotation back in those days, right? Back
yeah,
then.
you were a scumbag, you
Yeah.
know. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, and obviously there there's a lot of tie between you and the Ramones over the years, and you got a lot of Ramones stories. I saw a story. Tell me the story that about you being in the van when Dee Dee pulled a knife on Johnny.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, so what happened there? Why'd he pull the knife?
Johnny turned to Dee Dee, and Connie was sitting next to him.
Dee Dee's
And he said,
girlfriend,
"What?"
right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
and Connie Ramone, notorious Connie Ramone, who tried to cut off Arthur Kane's thumb so he couldn't go on tour with the New York Dolls because they're in L.A. the next week. So, Johnny turns to Dee Dee and says, what are you doing with her? She's a pig. She's a pig. I mean, just goading Dee Dee. Just, you know. And Dee Dee's You see like the veins popping out of his neck, and he pulls out this 007 knife, and he's lunging at, and I'm in between them,
Yeah.
I'm trying not to get stabbed by, he's, what are you going to do? Kill me? What do you, he just keeps goading him,
Yeah.
until someone had to calm Dee Dee down. I at that point, I think I got out of the van. I said, I've had enough of this. Being in the van with the Ramones was not fun.
Yeah, because there
It
was a lot of that chaos and tension, right? All the time. It was just, they were, it was a very business-like relationship, right? Because a lot of the guys, you hear about Johnny and Joey not getting along, but they
Yeah.
worked together.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you hear, that they didn't speak much. And of course, Dee Dee was, he was like constant chaos, right? I mean, Dee Dee was the most punk thing about the band. And,
Dee Dee was a very unusual character. I've never met anyone like Dee Dee in my life,
yeah.
Dee Dee,
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, but probably the most one of the most ta the, probably the most talented guys ever to be in the band. Great songwriter.
Well, but Joey could sing anything.
Right. No,
Joey
yeah.
could sing anything. I mean, he made It's a Wonderful World his own. He stole it from Louis Armstrong. I mean, come on. That's a pretty hard task to do,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and then Joey, right? Joey's the whole, I mean, got some OCD stuff going on, and at first was a very shy, timid guy. And I mean, so it's a very wacky band.
Yeah, I was kind of Joey's first best friend besides our girl, because he lived at our girl. So I always hung out with Joey, and I always brought him out. We always went out, tried to pick up girls and get drunk,
So, I mean, and you talked about Arturo, right? I mean, Arturo, the Ramones is so unique too, though, because it's like you had the band, but then you had guys like Arturo and Monty and guys that worked for them pretty much the duration. Or were associated with it for the duration, and that's very unique in
Yeah,
music.
I know. Well, Arturo was one of the greatest guys. I mean, Arturo kept Joey and I alive for years, He'd give us a buck 50 and we'd be able to buy each a buck 50, and for 75 cents you'd be able to buy a pack of cigarettes and a quart of beer. So that's what we lived on for a while.
And of course, Arturo Wright designing the infamous presidential logo, probably one of the most known logos in rock and roll.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, just unbelievable. And not only that, right? You hear you were tied to New York, tied to this, that, but somehow you wound up at the Sex Pistols final show in San Francisco in '78, right?
Yeah.
And from what I read, you at first you didn't even want to go. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Because I was with the Ramones, and the Ramones hated the Sex Pistols, hated them. And John called me for he, John and Roberta were on the entire tour, and I didn't even know they were going on tour with them, I had already left for LA, and John called me and said, you got to meet us in San Francisco, and you'll love Sid, he's just like you. And I thought, oh, thanks a lot, this guy's a fucking idiot, so I picked up the receptionist from Playboy. And we drove in a van with a bunch of other people. I don't even know who drove the van. But it seemed like it took a day to get to San Francisco from LA. And we checked it. And I left the van and took the girl. We checked into the Miyako Hotel, which had these great baths, green bathtubs. They were kind of square. And you poured this green shit into the tub. And you could float in the tub. And they had these best crab salad sandwiches, like a lobster salad, but on English muffins. And I just ate those all day long and fucked the girl in the bathtub and had a great time.
Man, what a life.
It was the
Those are the
show.
days.
I didn't even want to go to the sex. I didn't want to leave the hotel. It was so luxurious. And the Sex Pistols show was a nightmare. I
Yeah,
said,
right. I mean, Johnny had
I
checked out, right? He
don't
was
what?
Johnny Rotten had checked out, right? He
They
was.
don't, well, Sid couldn't fucking play the
Well,
bass.
yeah.
They just got him for the look. Glenn Matlock, to me, was the genius of the
Hell
band
yeah. Yeah.
because he wrote all the songs,
Yep.
And Glenn's a great guy. I really like Glenn.
But Sid was Johnny's buddy, right? And or something, you know. And I mean, but and the weird thing is, they always say Sid idolized Dee Dee, but
He did. He did.
yeah. But he was like Dee Dee without any talent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he yeah, his one talent was he looked like the punk rocker, you know. So when he allegedly stabbed Nancy, you know, it was like, see, these, it's true what we told you about these punk people. They all they do is take drugs and kill their girlfriends. And so the magazine was kind of over at that time, you know.
So you said, right, you were with the Ramones, you didn't want to see the Sex Pistols, right, caused a lot of that negative attitude towards punk. The spitting, the violence, whatever. How much were the Ramones bitter about that? Because they got lumped in with that shit. And
And the Ramones were like the most well-behaved guys. And, you know, Johnny ran the Ramones like a military operation,
absolutely. Yeah.
you know. So, yeah, that's why they hated them.
Yeah. Yeah, because you always hear, right, a lot of their struggles where they were lumped in with punk, but they weren't they didn't hit those stereotypes that the press, you know,
Well, yeah,
were put.
but you know what? A punk was doomed from the beginning because they just no one ever talked about the music. They just look at these people. And there was an episode of Quincy where they're killing people in the mosh pit. You know, it was bullshit. It was, you know, the mainstream media in this country sucks, okay? As a
Right. I mean, it's so the, I mean, you've been involved with punk, it, you know, as a journalist, this and that. You wrote the definitive book, we'll get to that, on punk. What do you define punk music as?
you got to hear the Chuck Berry in it. You
Okay.
know?
Yeah, that's what I always thought, like with the Ramones, right? It's like stripping it down to the basics, right? Taking it back to the roots.
Plus, you know, it doesn't matter what I think punk is, it's what you think it is. You know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a lot of bands out there I'm not really, you know, I don't listen to and stuff, but I wish them well, you know? It just, 'cause I don't happen to, someone else loves it, you know? That's
Yeah.
what it was. It was kind of this all because none of the bands at CBGB's ever sounded alike. You know, there was
Yeah.
Blondie and there was the Talking Heads and there was Television and there was Patti Smith. I mean, and there was the Dictators and there was the Dead Boys. I mean, they were just rock and roll bands, you know.
Yeah.
We just put punk on it because we thought it was kind of funny, you know. We thought we were going to make the new Mad magazine, you know. That's what I was hoping for, you know.
I mean, punk's become this label right now, and it's I don't know. I think punk's more associated with the label like hardcore punk, right? That the fast, the speed. That's what people always think with punk anymore. And you know, and I'm not saying that didn't have a place, or you know, I'm no problem with that. But I think punk's been become. I don't know. I don't think punk was necessarily a style; it was more of an attitude.
Yeah,
And
exactly. Exactly. All these people seem to have that attitude, even the talking heads, you know. We don't give a fuck if you like us or not. We're going to do what we want to, because there was no place for any bands to play original music, you know, except Max's and CBGB's and a couple of few other clubs that opened and closed pretty quickly. But there was nowhere to play original music. And if they weren't playing it on the radio, which they didn't, you know, how are you going to hear it?
So,
You know?
I mean, are you pretty much completely disengaged from the music scene now? I mean, is there anything now that captures your interest that you see and think it's got the right vibe, the right feel?
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Not anything current.
I still listen to them. I still listen to like 60. I listen to what I always listen to, you know.
So
60s pop and, you know, Question Mark and the Mysterians and, you know, all that great stuff, you know. That was my childhood, you know.
yeah, it's
Donovan,
weird.
you
It,
know.
it, it's weird. A lot of that stuff, right? Some of that stuff that they've labeled quote unquote proto punk, right? Some of those because they feel like it was the. Well, it's weird how they label stuff. Everything has to have a label anymore, and I mean, there's some of that, like you know, some of that weird, like the Kinks of shit, where they say, "Oh, this is what led to punk," and they call it pro. I mean, it's I don't know. It's odd to me.
I don't know. Well, you just listen to
It's
it, you know.
complicated. Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm a huge Motorhead fan, and Lemmy, you know, Lemmy, they've been labeled everything in the book, but Lemmy started every show by just saying we play rock and roll, and they did, right? They just played it their way. But in the 80s, you wrote and edited for Spin magazine, right?
Yeah.
What was that like for you? Because that was that a little more mainstream than your usual taste? Did they give you a lot of liberty or?
Well, I hated writing about music, so I would take whatever assignments were not on m music on because on when you write for music, you have to get the part where the music and you need those two paragraphs to describe it. And it's just so boring, you know, writing about music. So I wanted to write about war and drug epidemics and things like that, you know. That's what I
And you did write an article in Spin, right, about the Ramones. I heard caused some friction between Holmstrom and Joy Ramone. Is that right?
I no, the Ramones hated everything we ever wrote. From the day one, they didn't want to be called the punk band. When we
Okay.
wrote in the first issue that they were punk, no, in the third issue, and we said they're the ultimate punk band or something like that. And Johnny wanted us to go out and cross out every time the word punk was mentioned. That's how much they didn't want to be called a punk band, you know?
Yeah,
Just
okay.
thought they were a rock and roll band, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, which I think they were, right? I mean,
Yeah, they were the
they were
best.
just stripped down. And so you also, like I said earlier, you literally wrote the book, right? The definitive guide, Please Kill Me, The Uncensored Oral History of Punk, which has been labeled as, the definitive book on punk. But it began, its roots began as you wanting to do kind of an oral history book on Dee Dee, correct?
All right, well, Dee Dee came to me after the Ramones, after he left the Ramones.
Yeah.
And I just turned on the tape recorder and Dee Dee talked for 10 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, I
And
mean,
that's
this very lengthy interview that you were going to do. So how did it evolve then from that into this more general book on
well,
punk?
I was interviewing Danny Fields and Jillian was reading the transcripts and she said, this is much bigger than Dee Dee. This is, you know, because Danny had managed or signed actually. Signed the MC5 and the Stooges on the same day to Elektra Records and had been the press officer for the Doors and you know Danny had a which is why the book is dedicated because he did so much and a lot of this music would not have existed like Nico's sing solo albums and the Modern Lovers I don't think even would have gotten together if it wasn't for Danny Fields. You know, saying to Ernie and the other guy, you should check out this guy, Jonathan Richman. He's playing in Harvard Square or wherever it was, Cambridge Square.
Yeah, it's crazy because I mean you don't hear the name Danny Fields enough for what he did for in music. I mean,
Yeah.
and his impact. I mean, it's crazy when you think of that, right? I mean, but there is this to me, there is this spiritual lineage from guys like the Doors to the Ramones and all that. I mean, if you want to label what's punk, I mean, the Doors to me, I thought they were very punk in attitude for their
Yeah,
time. I mean,
they were. Yeah, of course. Break on through to the other side, you know.
yeah, I mean Morrison did his own thing for the most part, and
Morrison was an asshole. Yeah.
did you ever meet Jim Morrison?
No.
No.
I think my older brother and my sister saw them.
I mean, I think Morrison at his core was an alcoholic, right?
I think he was more. I was best friends with his best friend, Tom Baker. We got arrested. He got arrested for skyjacking an airplane because they were both drunk on the airplane. So, in the morning, we lived at the Boho Club on 14th Street, which was this old vaudeville rehearsal loft, and had a stage, and we slept on the stage. And in the morning, I always had the shakes from drinking, so Tom would go out, cop me a Valium in the park there. On 14th Street, and then he would spoon feed me a coffee yogurt because I would be too.
So was Tom one of Morrison's drinking buddies?
Yes,
Yeah.
yeah.
So, oh man, that's crazy. So
But
you meant
the great ending of the story was, they ended up sleeping with the two stewardesses who testified against them.
Tom and Morrison.
Yes. Which I thought was fantastic.
That's right. That's
And
yeah.
when it got to that part of the story, my Valium had usually kicked in and I was okay.
There you go. So I gotta ask though, right? The Please Kill Me started with this 10-hour DD tape interview, right? Is there a
Yes.
chance that you'll ever do anything with some of that interview with DD? And do it. I know you wanted to do a book on DD. Is there a chance? Maybe I know there's been some out there.
You
Is there a
never
chance?
know. You never know.
Because there's got to be some good stuff, right? In those 10 hours, right? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
yeah. I will hope maybe someday if you have the time and the interest that maybe you'll do a little something.
I think I used a lot of it for Please Kill Me,
Were you surprised with how well received Please Kill Me was? How well it was received?
Shocked. Shocked. I didn't think it would sell. Well, I had just come from when I left Spin, I was given my own magazine, and that went out of business, and I lost like $50,000,
Yeah.
and I had just come off this horrible failure, and writing had become such a business. It was like porn, it was like Madonna the cover, Bon Jovi's this cover, it was just like, get me off this treadmill,
Yeah.
just want to do, I want to take my time and do it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was always on deadline at Spin,
Yeah.
and it was awful, I mean, I was always in a kind of in a state of fear, because I had to write on airplanes, and it was a nightmare, and Spin was one of the most dysfunctional magazine there ever was,
Yeah.
which is why I got hired there, I was as dysfunctional as the magazine, but I was always kind of in sheer terror of doing a shitty job, And a lot of my Spin stuff wasn't that good because I didn't have the time to really, anyway. So I wanted to take my time when this magazine nerve went under, take my time to do it right because I'd always been rushed,
Yeah,
Which,
yeah.
so I was just, there was one guy who I wanted to like it, and he did.
Who's that?
He was my sponsor in the Sober Sailor Society.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. But I mean, the
And
book is.
I had brought, his name was Gary, and
Yeah.
I had brought him first drafts of the book where I had everyone as kind of being their fucked up childhoods, why they became so fucked up.
Yeah.
And he said, he read it and he said, "Legs, you guys weren't victims. You were the perpetrators." And it just went through me like a shot. Like, of course, So
Yeah.
I didn't speak to him for the next 3 or 4 years doing the book. I was so angry with myself that I didn't realize that fact, that he
Yeah.
was. So obviously had seen it. And so I was just writing it to prove him that, So when I got the first galley, I had my assistant send it over to him. He was the producer of the writer and the producer of the Bill Cosby show.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Please Kill Me still, right? Still had up when you hear people, if you look online and people are saying, oh, what punk book should I read? What's the definitive book? Please Kill Me is always the first thing out of everybody. I mean, still, how many it's been several reprints. And
Well, it sold over 2.5 million copies worldwide.
yeah, and from what I can see, still looks like it still sells pretty well to this day. And
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I mean, so that's got to be, I mean, getting to do it your way, take your time with it, right? Do what you want, tell the story the way you want to,
But
whatever's.
when I was done with it, I was done with punk, sort of, And
Yeah.
that's all anyone ever wants to talk to me about is. It's like if everyone in your high school graduating class became famous, and that's all anyone ever wanted to talk to you about for the rest of your fucking life. It'd be kind of like, I moved on from Please Kill. I did a book for Pepsi, and I went and did the porn book. I
Yeah,
did,
yeah.
and I've done tons of other stuff, and
Yeah.
now I'm making movies, you know.
Right, which that's actually my, well, I want to get there in a second. First, I want to talk about, you also wrote the biography, I Slept with Joey Ramone, with Mickey Lay, Joey's brother. How did you come to work with him on that?
It was a nightmare.
Which part? Working with Mickey or just?
Working with Mickey, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. Yeah.
He's very protective of Joey's legacy, isn't he?
Well, he's very protective of his own legacy.
Well, that too, yeah.
You know, he wouldn't tell me what the ending of the book was.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard to structure a book when you don't know what the ending is, you know?
Right, yeah. So, well, I mean, yeah, I think everybody's got their opinions on Mickey and what he does, but I guess he is keeping Joey's memory alive. We'll give him that much.
I don't know what he's doing.
But you did mention doing films. So I did want to bring up, you co-wrote, directed the documentary Pusher Man, Frank Lucas and the True Story of American Gangster, man, which is a fascinating film. I watched it on Tubi the other day.
You did.
Absolutely. I loved it. It was fascinating because, right, it's kind of the true story of what American Gangster, right? The Denzel movie.
Yeah.
To me, though,
which I thought was a very entertaining movie.
It was.
But as Richie Roberts says, it's not true. You know, he said I went to it and I saw it and I enjoyed it, but I knew that it wasn't true. You know.
I always liked the movie, but I thought the real story, the true story, was more entertaining than the movie.
So did I. That's why I made this film.
It's wild, and it's fascinating to know how something, you know, this story of Frank and what he did,
well,
and how
I thought since AI has taken over and most writers have lost their jobs, I thought, why not bring the writer to the viewer, you know? That's why I got Mark Jacobson, you know, who was fantastic telling the story, you know, because he was hysterically funny, you know.
Yeah.
And Richie, and then he got me Richie Roberts, who Denzel plays in the movie, you know.
Yeah.
And then I got and Darius James and Fab Five Freddy and Michael Daly, who all knew each other, you know. So that was fun. That was kind of fun.
Well, so how did you end up on that project? How did that? What sparked your interest on that?
It was 70s New York again. I loved, you know, you can't go wrong mining 70s New York City because it was so, people can't imagine how fucked up it was, you know? It was just destroyed. And everybody was running around doing whatever they wanted, you know? So, I mean, there's probably still, you know, 1,000 stories about New York City that would make great, you know, 70s stories of New York City that would make great movies and documentaries and stuff.
You know? Yeah, well, because it's crazy to think this guy writing what he was doing and everything, Frank, and then showing up at the Ali fight in that coat and drawing all that attention and getting in, was it Ebony or Essence, the
Ebony,
magazine?
Ebony,
yeah. Yeah. Getting the picture in Ebony, and it's crazy. That crap would never happen in 2025.
No.
So it's...
Nothing happens in 2025.
Bunch of fake stuff, right? I mean, made up. But it's nuts to think about it, and I don't know. I thought the documentary, the real story, the people talking that were there, I thought it was much more fascinating. But I'm a documentary guy. I really am.
Yeah, I do. I am too. I watch them while I'm working and stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
Except for the datelines in the 2020s.
Oh yeah. No.
They always when they go to commercial, when they come back, they recount the whole first half that you've seen prior to the commercial. And they keep doing that to stretch it out. And it makes it so fucking boring. It's like they don't think their audience has any intelligence, you know? They gotta remind who this guy is and that guy. Which is, you know, you gotta know who the characters are, but you don't have to pound it into their fucking heads, you know?
Yeah, I lean more towards the independent filmmaker just wanting to tell the story more than you know, any other agenda. That the guy that picks up on a fascinating story and just wants to make sure it's told.
Yeah.
And
I just like telling good stories.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you said that, right, when you wrote the book, The Police Kill Me, right, you kind of closed the door on punk for you. But you know, and I'm assuming you don't listen to a lot of punk or anything. But what do you think this current state of quote unquote punk music now, right? The shirts in Walmarts and Hot Topics, and you know, soccer moms wearing Sex Pistols shirt. It's very odd. Don't you agree? I mean.
I haven't seen any of that. People around don't wear,
But it's out there, and it just seems very
a lot of people have blue hair.
it seems very anti-punk anymore, right? It's not the same spirit. It's a peculiar.
Well, as soon as it, as that's what happens to every mass movement. It becomes so commercialized and commodified. I mean, that's what happened to the hippie movement. You
Yeah,
know, it
right.
was Peter Max doing, New York telephone yellow pages covers, I mean, I remember the contact paper on our kitchen table were like sunflower. It was very hippie-ish, and shag carpeting, everything becomes, every mass movement becomes so commodified and so commercialized that it loses its kind of soul in a way, So that would happen to punk too.
Yeah,
But and they're not listening to the music still, they're just wearing the pictures,
Well, it's odd because bringing it back to the Ramones, right? Because I mean, the Ramones fought, never had anything that you would call a big hit, had to rely on tour money, right? Touring constantly to
and t-shirt
survive, and
t-shirt and
t-shirt
shorts.
money. But now it's like, now though, that the band, the four original members are all gone, and everything, it's like the band now is bigger than it's ever been, and they have music and games and movies, and their t-shirts still the one of the biggest selling things in the world. And it's weird that they've achieved this level of success now in retrospect, that it's odd how nostalgia, how
Hey,
what nostalgia quote unquote sells.
what the fuck? I mean, Trump's president. Anything's possible. I mean, come on, look at it. Look what you're saying.
That is true. And I don't want to think about that part.
Neither do I. But that's the world we're living in.
It is very weird, right? It's a very short attention span world, right? Everything's in sound bites and headlines and clips, and nobody does any research or digs into anything. Or it's, I mean, it's very peculiar.
Not my fault.
Nope. It's I don't know.
Don't put it on me. You can't blame this one on me.
No, Lex, I'm not blaming it on you. I'm just you brought up Trump, so I'm kind of a little bit.
Okay.
No one knows what's real or not anymore. I
Well,
mean,
you should watch Pusher Man because it's free on Tubi and everybody gets Tubi, right?
well, they can. That's what I was getting ready to say, right? My next point, you can watch Pusherman on Tubi. You can rent it on Amazon if somebody wants to do that, if that's their preferred choice.
And or you can buy it from MVD Music Entertainment.
Yeah.
Entertainment. MVD.
Yeah. But
Buy
yeah,
the DVD.
but like you said, Tubi's free for anybody, right? Anybody that's got a smart TV or whatever else can download Tubi and watch it. That's how I did it. I have Tubi, and that's how I watched it. No problems. Was all there. And then of course
Did
all
all
your
your wait a minute, did all your friends watch it too? Did you tell everybody to watch it?
well, my wife watched it. I don't have a lot of friends. I don't associate with a lot of people. I don't like people. My wife watched it though. She liked it.
I have a t-shirt that says I like books more than people. I should have worn that.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. But speaking of books, all your books, right? Not only Let's Kill Me, but you've got several books out there, right? That available on Amazon, other major book retailers. You have a site, correct? What is it? Is it Legsville? Is that what it's called?
Legsville,
Legsville.com. So are you working on anything currently now that Pusherman's in the books and out there?
Yeah, I'm working on a memoir called Resident Punk. I'm
Yeah.
doing a movie called Johnny in Wonderland about the true story of the Wonderland Avenue murders, which hasn't ever been
Oh,
told.
very nice. So there you go. Always working, Legs. You're always telling stories, aren't you? You're never done with that.
No.
All right. Well, and I'm assuming, right, if people want to keep watching on Legsville.com, they can see updates on that stuff, right? As it develops and as it's available.
Or my Facebook or my Instagram.
Yeah, right. Is it? It's just they can look up Legs McNeil and find you on those, right? I mean,
yeah,
you're there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I
Although
didn't.
I can't accept. Everybody wants to be my friend, but I can't. After you get to 5,000,
Yeah, you get a limit. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why they don't make me a public figure, so I can get all the friends I want, but they
Yeah.
don't. You know, it's the
I don't
new Meta's the new fascism. You
know.
know.
It is. I don't try to understand Facebook and Meta and all that stuff. It's social media is weird. But yeah, so there you got me. There's lots of legs out there to consume, right? The Pusher Man on Tubi, the books that you can get on the retailers. You can
Yeah.
go to legsville.com to keep up with the new stuff getting ready to come out.
Yeah.
Always working. Always
Always works.
telling stories, always never stops.
I believe we're doing a big documentary on Punk Magazine too, but I don't know if that's going to come about or not.
Yeah, who's doing that?
Michael Gramaglia, who made the famous end of the century, the Ramones movie.
Oh yeah. Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a great story to tell.
Yeah.
And you know, and all the I mean all the components I guess are still out there, right, to talk to and
What? Did you say doggy do?
no, the components.
Oh.
Is Jed Dunn still alive? Is he still
No.
out there?
No,
No. Okay,
he
so
passed away.
yeah. So, but you know, I mean, there's a, yeah, that'd be an interesting story to tell and talk about because it was a kind of a short-lived run, but it was impactful and it was representative.
Yeah, it was very influential.
Yeah. And, especially in that New York scene and everything else, which, it's wild back in those days, right? The scenes were different, right? I mean, you had the New York scene and the LA scene and everything was different, right? Because the world felt bigger. And so it was a little different. I mean, you hear punk now, but used to it was New York punk, LA punk, and
It was a lot different.
yeah, it was a there was a oh well, what are you gonna do?
Yeah,
But
what are you gonna talk?
tell those stories, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure talking to you,
A pleasure talking to you
and
too.
hopefully we can stay in touch and keep me posted on some of those projects. And
Yeah, sure.
I'll put the word out there and help plug them a little bit.
Yeah, tell
And
everybody to watch Pusher Man.
I definitely will. Yeah, like I said, I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I'm a documentary guy though. I'm always looking for a documentary to watch. So when I saw that pop up and you were sharing it, I pretty much went out there immediately and watched it because
Oh, really?
yeah, I'm always looking for a documentary to watch. And it was man, it was fascinating. I liked it.
Yeah.
It
Oh,
was
thanks.
fun. And like
Thank
I
you.
said, I always. Many times the true story is better than the movie story. And I thought
Yeah.
this was one of them. So, but yeah, I fully enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing some of your other things you do. I hope it's not the last documentary we see that you work on.
Okay. All right. Well,
All
thank
right.
you for having me.
Absolutely, Legs.
Hey, Bruiser buddies, I want you to listen to Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Every week, he has the roughest and toughest interviews in the podcast world today with the best guests you could ask for. There's no bums on this show. Let Dave Dynasty be your podcasting tag team partner and listen to Wrestling Nostalgia while drinking beer, smoking cigars, and busting heads. Just look it up on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today, because the Bruiser said so.
All right, and thank you to Legs McNeil for coming on and doing that interview with me. The next episode of the show will be available on September 1st. The guest will be announced soon on social media. So once again, make sure you subscribe so that you know when that is announced. Thank you to all the listeners and followers for all your support and everything. Be sure to tell your friends and fellow Ramones fans about the podcast and help us to grow. Also, be sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Leave a rating and review. And as I said earlier, make sure you follow us on social media. We're on pretty much all the platforms. Just search for Pinhead Pod. And be sure to share all of our posts. Help the podcast audience grow. You can also give us feedback, suggestions, tell us your Ramones stories, etc. on these platforms. Thank you so much, guys, for listening to another episode and joining. Make sure you subscribe. Feedback has been great for the show. It is very encouraging, and I do appreciate it. So until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and Gabba Gabba Hey.
Hey, oh, let's go. Hey, oh, let's go.